passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
2-2 pitch. Swing.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. I am here alongside the main event winner from 2023. And you might be wondering, how are the Blue Jays involved in the Shohei Ohtani bidding? Well, Dylan has pulled his money. He put in some good investments, some good bets. He hit big on crypto. I don't know. Is that still possible? Could you still hit big on crypto? I don't know. He made some investments. He quadrupled his money, and he's now willing to foot the bill for Shohei Ohtani's first year in Toronto. He's going to pay $50 million out of pocket. I'm letting the people in on your scheme here, Dylan. Not everybody knows about this. Actually, no one but me. Not even you. But let's talk to the people about how you're going to lure Shohei Ohtani.
I found a better return on investment. Instead of offering to pay for Ohtani's services in Toronto, I actually just paid Dave Roberts to talk about meeting him. It was much cheaper.
You're the one you're the reason that there's the leaks. That you didn't repurpose the money for the first year. You're playing the mind games. You're out there, you know.
Exactly.
Working the internet, trolling farms and up overseas and all that. It's a conspiracy.
I'm actually very excited about it. I really think, in all seriousness, that the Jays seem to be some serious players in this Ohtani thing. And, I don't want to get my hopes up. But
it looks like the Dodgers and the Blue Jays right now.
Yeah.
Because the Cubs are out of it, right? And there's some – Hoyer had words with Bob Nightingale at the winter meetings recently, the last couple of hours. There was a tweet about that. I don't know if that means maybe the Cubs aren't on it or they are. I can't imagine if he's looking for a winning organization, he's going to go back to the Angels. Could be wrong. You never know. Here's the thing, though. And this is the thing that I want to throw out there. When the Ohtani initial signing process was going on, I wasn't at Baseball America. I don't even think I was at Prospects Live. I want to say it was maybe about to start Prospects Live. I think I was at Razzball still. And I was all over it, right? And the thing that stuck out to me is it was the Rangers, it was the Cubs, it was the Mariners, and it was the Dodgers. So those are the teams we kept hearing, the Yankees. But then we heard it was only going to be West Coast teams, okay? And it was like, all right, the Angels were not like this top of mind team. I think the prevailing wisdom, the day that he signed or around the time he was going to sign, because obviously it was that window, was that it was going to be the Mariners. And it was the Angels, and I think people were a little bit surprised. We had heard he maybe wanted a smaller market, and people kind of like, it's still LA. And so I don't know how much the rumor mill means anything, and I wonder if there is a mystery team out there. But it does seem like, because of some of the financial situations in baseball, and I know we're getting really in the weeds here in a fantasy baseball podcast opening, but because of some of the regional sports networks, the RSNs, and the things that teams that were connected with a lot of those have struggled with because they're not earning the revenue that they were, you know, in my youth and in their heyday, where it was like the only place I could watch the Red Sox was Nesson, and like, you know, the Yes Network owned the Yankees, etc. That's not the case necessarily any longer. And so a lot of those business models obviously aren't doing well. Teams are tied to that. And I do think there were some bigger losses than what people have let on in baseball, or what many want to admit. Sure, we would ideally like to see everybody was in on Ohtani, but, you know, just for example, I was talking with somebody yesterday involved in the Red Sox organization, and you look at their current roster construction, they kind of have too many DHs and guys that are probably going to be DHs that are coming up for Ohtani to fit in. If you know, adding Ohtani and you have to play Yoshida in left field, you got a lot of money committed to him. He's not the only guy that's kind of DH-ish either that's on that team. Rafael Devers is at third base. He's going to play third base for a while, but kind of DH-ish. So, like, I can see why a team wouldn't want to invest $50 million into Ohtani if they're constructed a particular way. Now, just from a pure baseball perspective, of course. So I don't know how much I trust all the rumors, but I will say I got a Blue Jays fan in this house. I write about the Blue Jays. I get to go onto the pregame shows and stuff like that from time to time. It's good for the Jeff Ponce business if Ohtani signs with the Blue Jays. I just talked about myself in the third person, like Bob Dole, but like it is. I personally, I'm rooting for it. None of my teams got the first pick. The Rockies had a great chance. The Cardinals were right up there. They all dropped down in the lottery. I don't have the Guardians or the Reds to write it about. So come on. Daddy needs a little juice here. Come on. I texted somebody with the Blue Jays today. Was like, please sign Ohtani.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. The Jays want a left-handed bat. They have a spot at DH open. They're in their window. Like, Toronto will embrace him. Huge multicultural community. I mean, they're Canada's team, so he'll have a whole nation behind him. So it'll be like two nations fully behind him. Like, it makes a lot of sense. We don't need – Toronto doesn't need a pitcher really right now. So, like, in 2024, so there's no, like, pressure on him to hurry up and heal because we need you back, that type of thing. It does make a lot of sense. But, of course, you know, once he signs with the Dodgers, it'll be like, yeah, of course, it was always going to be the Dodgers. In hindsight, in retrospect, yeah,
I think that's where the smart money lies. But I do love the idea of him being in Toronto. You'll get opportunities to see him more often. I'll get opportunities to see him more often. And I think, like, a lineup where you have Ohtani, Vlad, Bo Bichette, Springer, David Schneider potentially. How could that not be fun? How could that lineup not? And the other thing, we'll see what Manoah comes back like. We're going to turn this into a Blue Jays podcast. You know, we'll see what version of Jose Berrios we get next year. It's still a pretty deep rotation when you think about it. It's just a matter of some of those pieces, you know, being what we thought they were. They entered last season with a real shot as contenders, especially if Dalton Varsho has, you know, an 850 OPS as opposed to the year that he had. And Manoah is, you know, even three quarters of what he was in 2022 as opposed to 1%. I mean, Manoah's season could not have gone any worse, you know, on all accounts. So, and you got like Matt Chapman, who hit in the first half, but then was almost like at points like unstartable in the second half. He just was not hitting at all. So it was a really unusual year for them. I think when you look in at their lineup on paper, it's still pretty good. And they do have some close to the majors sort of depth players and other guys like Orelvis Martinez, which I think is an upgrade at second base. It could be a really good lineup next year. And if they added Ohtani, obviously, I think the middle of that order would, you know, go pound for pound with anybody.
Well, especially when they trade Manoah for Juan Soto, it'll be a great lineup.
I don't know. They need Manoah back. He is in the gym, though. I've been monitoring on Instagram to see how he's doing. He's posting from his brother's dingy gym down in Miami, and that is indeed a good sign. So there we go. Other winter meetings, news and notes, not a whole lot. A lot has not happened. We haven't had any big free agent signings yet. We just kind of got the first real trade, I would say, right? I mean, there's been a couple of trades, but not anything substantial. Where we have a Red Sox and Yankees trade. It's been so slow that the the only trade that happened was a trade that no one expected to happen. So Alex Verdugo was traded to the Yankees. Left-handed hitter, probably from a power perspective, a huge upgrade going to Yankee Stadium versus Fenway, just in terms of the depth and dimensions of right field at each of those parks. Always been a solid hitter. There's pretty good skills there. Not always consistent, though, and I think he's always lacked upside. It's kind of you see what you see is what you get. It's an everyday regular, maybe a slightly above average everyday regular. In return, the Red Sox get Richard Fitz, who I think has some starting opportunities, has shown some good traits over the last couple of years, but not somebody that you're going to anticipate is going to be a major part of your rotation for many years to come or anything like that. Greg Weissert, who is a pretty good reliever. And then was it Richard Giudice from Louisiana Monroe, eighth rounder from the Yankees last year? Is it Richard for the first time, right? So kind of interesting. We're looking at his stuff, college stuff. He didn't pitch in pro at all. But young, interesting arm, kind of an interesting slider, like mid-80s with some sweep. Fastball was like 92, 95, but dead zone-y. So we'll see. We'll see what it is. Or it just could be the Red Sox trying to move on from him and get some pieces that they can package together and make some other deals. Who knows? Let's hope there's some wheeling and dealing here.
Well, I know he had, like, I know Boston kind of soured on him. I know he had the fight with Cora or whatever. He didn't hustle or something. So he was benched for, you know, about a week or so. So they're probably wanting to get out from underneath him for a while. It's interesting. I'm looking. So his power 2023, 2022, 2021, last 3 years has been 13 home runs, 11 home runs, 13 home runs. So not very good. But if you go on Savant and their expected home runs by park for the Yankees, last year he would have had 12. So not much change. But then 2022, 20, and 2021, he would have had 19. So, you know, 20 home run power is a lot better than 12 home run power. So maybe he gets rejuvenated. Yeah. Maybe he's actually more fantasy relevant this year than he's been the last couple of years. So I've always liked Verdugo because he's, you know, always been like a 280 batting average guy, and in those
he's a
rounds,
good blue guy. Yeah,
exactly.
He's like the guy that can offset taking somebody that hits 210 with like 40 bombs. You're like, all right, like I can get some of the power back with the 40 bomb guy, and then offset his average with Verdugo. He's
exactly
sort of one of those plays in Roto, right? For sure. Also, I guess this was technically winter meetings. I guess it was, right? I can't remember if it was before the winter meetings or after.
Right on the cusp.
It was Sunday night, so it had not happened as of yet, if I remember correctly. And that is Jared Kelnick is traded to the Braves alongside Marco Gonzalez and Evan White. So kind of just dead money I think they wanted to get rid of. The Marco Gonzalez thing, he threw 50 innings last year. There's an elbow injury there. I do not know where he is in his rehab. I haven't seen any quick reports. There might be something out there recently, some updates. Some people, like, I know I talked with JJ yesterday, and he kind of mentioned, like, well, maybe he could be like that back of the rotation depth guy that they need who can eat innings. Coming off an elbow injury, if he didn't have Tommy John surgery, that's a big old shrug for me. I have no idea if that's going to be the case or not. If he is a guy that can eat a bunch of innings, I think this trade was purely Mariners moving some money off the books, getting rid of, you know, of Kelnick, which I think needed a change of scenery for both of them, the organization as well as Kelnick. He goes to a really good situation, I think, with the Braves, one of the better hitting coaches in baseball, and Kevin Seitzer. See what he can maybe do with Kelnick, and maybe they can rejuvenate him. Also, not going to have the same amount of pressure, sort of eyes on him. He's going to hit lower in that lineup. There's not going to be as many expectations. But I assume he is their Eddie Rosario replacement, as Rosario is a free agent. So could be kind of interesting there how he fits in. You know, I think some people are probably going to gamble on it for fantasy. I don't know if I'm still totally buying in, because I think that there's going to be a little bit of helium after the trade with the price tag. Like, if you had bought him 3 weeks ago, fine. Right. You love it. But right now, I don't know if I'm going to take the chance yet on Kelnick. I still want to see him produce and see if, you know, he can take that sort of next step forward into being an above average, you know, regular and we'll say a top, I don't know, 100 fantasy bat. He's been outside of that. So I don't think that's jumping huge, but I don't know. What are your thoughts on Kelnick and sort of how do you view him for next year? I think it's a positive change. I'm lukewarm on whether I'd want to acquire him or not.
Yeah, I think it's tough. I mean, I think if he was to land anywhere other than Colorado, I think you'd want it to be Atlanta. I think him not being the guy will take some pressure off of him, since he'll be like the eighth guy on in that lineup. So I think that's good for him. He doesn't have the pressure on him to produce. He's still only going to be in his age 24 season. So he's still very young. I think after the trade, Ken Rosenthal reported that Marco Gonzalez was not going to be on the Braves by beginning of the season. He was going to get traded. So I think it really is just Kelenic and money to the Braves. So I like it. I do think he's going to be overdrafted this year. People are going to take a shot on him. And he'll probably is not going to meet his draft cost. I like it in Dynasty, though. He's only 24. He's going to be like probably, hopefully, like a 20 home run, 10 to 15 stolen base guy in the Braves lineup is going to get counting stats. So I think he's going to be a good asset, I guess, in Dynasty. I mean, I prefer him in Dynasty to redraft, I guess, after this trade is what I'm trying to say. But I also don't think you're going to be able to get him. So I think if you tried to offer the Kelenic owner a trade, you're not going to get anything close to what you'd want because that person is going to be holding on for this potential lottery ticket. So I think it's good for his career. I think it's going to be good. I think it's ultimately good for him. But I'm not sure how it's going to shake out.
Yeah. Kind of feel the same way. I don't know if I'm fully bought in on it. And Cole Phillips goes the other way. Carlos has said that he would have been outside the top 40 in the Braves. That seems insane to me. I don't know if Phillips isn't throwing. He was 97 to 100 miles an hour with a good breaking ball prior to the draft. I think people really liked him when he got drafted. I don't know if his elbow is a mess. You know, Braves aren't a bad pitching organization. Mariners are a really good one. So I don't want to bet against Cole Phillips turning into something here, especially with the horsepower that he showed as an amateur. Some time to get all that back. Maybe they liked him beforehand, have something figured out, think they can get him back to where he needs to be. So to be determined on that one. So to be continued, we'll figure that out. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to talk about the big news. Maybe the top 50 dynasty list that we didn't mention at all in the opening that we released today. And this podcast is based around that top 50 dynasty list. We'll be right back after this break, though.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them, all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, and we're back. As we teased before the break, we're going to talk a little top 50 dynasty list. This is sort of a ceremonial post figurehead, so to speak, to kick off our ranking season. We're going to be going position by position, starting with catchers next week. We're going to have a corresponding article, supplemental article with each that kind of breaks down some targets, some buys, some fades, some sleepers, that sort of thing. We did that within the rankings post last year. We're going to be a little deeper this year. And we're going to be rolling these position rankings all the way through December and through January, culminating in our big old dynasty list. We'll have a prospect list as well. So putting all that beautiful work together. But it was kind of fun to start off with a top 50, I felt, and kind of establish and get the board figured out and how things sort of relate to each other. Up at the top, because it's one less blend that we have to worry about, because we already know how the pieces fall. But that being said, like, I felt like it was a good exercise. These are fun players to write about, number one, but just sort of getting into the mind state of like thinking about the rankings and how they relate, you know, this player versus this player, this prospect versus this veteran, how to factor in age and production and then fantasy value. And trying to look at all those sort of areas and put together your ranking based on objective and subjective factors. So, and then I combined it with Dylan. I think we both really like where this list came out, but I do think there's some interesting talking points with some of the players. But what were your overall thoughts on the process and the final product? I know we did something similar last year, but I really felt like it was later in the, because of when you started, it was later in the off season, and we were at like in a absolute fire drill to get everything done in time. So
I liked it, the process this year, much better than last year. I started earlier. What I found encouraging was we were in that fantasy tool shed mock, the two of us that we talked about a couple weeks ago. And like the top 50 picks, maybe the top 100 picks were kind of, I wouldn't say chalk, but the top 100 were basically who I had in my top 100. So that was a good validation that, you know, we're all kind of on the right track of how we're valuing these dynasty players. And then it just completely opened up. So I think the readers are going to have, they're going to really enjoy when we go into the positions, once you get into like the 20s and all that, where it starts to diverge. I think that's going to be very interesting, because I think that's where you find the gems, you find the values. Is like, everyone knows, you know, Julio Rodriguez is very good and Pete Alonso is very good. But then when you get down into like the Ben Rice and Justice Bigby and all that, it's like, you don't really know how they slot in into a top 600 or so. And so I think the readers are really going to get a lot of good information out of that. So, I mean, I followed my basic process, which is projections, my projections, age curves, try to like figure out like a 3-year value. And then I rank, the way I do it is I rank within position, which gives me a good head start on when we do the position ranks, that I'm kind of like, okay, let me figure out first baseman. Is this guy better than this guy? Is this guy better than this guy? Once I get those, and I can blend that with the second baseman. And then my whole list kind of shakes out that way and comes together. But so it's, you know, it's more data driven. This year I used WAR, using like kind of WAR curves to see. I mean, I think it's intuitive that someone who's like a 6 WAR player is going to be getting full time at bats than someone who's, you know, a 0.5 WAR player but good bat, that, you know, he's on the bubble of maybe not making it because he's a DH, that type of thing. So I had that inform my rankings a bit more than I did normally, normally meaning last year. So I kind of like the way it worked. It felt a bit more kind of systematic the way I approached it. And so I felt a lot more confident in my ranks this year.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think like, I tend to break things down like similarly, breaking into like position groups, combining those, and then ranking out prospects separately, and then sort of figuring out where I think they fall from a future value standpoint. And I think in terms of how I think about future value, it's very much like WAR driven. And then it's a matter of like, all right, if we're going to get to a similar place with a player like this, who has better offensive skills? What's the balance there? Because there's only a certain sort of threshold you need to meet in terms of defensive abilities to get everyday at bats if you're a great hitter, right? So, you know, sort of factoring all that stuff in to the bigger picture as well, you know, I think is fun. And I know that we have a much larger rank than what we've released, and we'll probably mess with it here and there as some things happen and stories develop, etc. But I think, you know, overall, it was a pretty smooth, seamless process. And when we combined our lists, I think we maybe talked about a handful of players, but there was nothing that was like a significant gap between the two of us that I can remember, at least in the top 50. You know, I think there may be a few here and there, a Nolan Jones or something, where we had a bit of a discrepancy. But I think that's going to happen with some of the more divisive players. I don't know what your thoughts are there.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I found in the top 50, top 100 is that a case can be made for all of them. They're all kind of close. If you think Junior Caminero is more valuable than Aaron Judge, then yeah, I can see the case for that. If you think Ellie De La Cruz is more valuable than, I don't know, I'm trying to pick someone like Riley Green, or maybe that's too low, Ellie De La Cruz compared to Bo Bichette, then sure, yeah, I can see that. But I can also see the case for Bo Bichette. So it's there's no real like table pounding saying it's so clear that Bo Bichette's better than Ellie De La Cruz. You're crazy to think that he's not. Because I think a very justifiable case could be made for all these players where they are, and we could invert them almost and still have the same ability to back up that positioning and that ranking. So I think the top 50, top 100 is kind of a clear top 100 in however you want to shake it out. And I think that's good for the listeners to know. I mean, if you want to trade someone that we have ranked 25th for someone who's ranked 35th, like, yeah, by all means, it probably makes, if it makes sense for your roster, then it's probably going to be a good trade for you. You don't have to, you know, be held hostage by the actual number beside the name. They're all very, very close, and it's all a matter of need. It's all a matter of your competitive window. It's all a matter of, you know, positional need. So I think it's a kind of a smooth process, because all the players that we're ranking have a justifiable rationale behind them.
Yeah, absolutely. That being said, let's talk about a few players here in the rankings that I think have maybe some interesting conversations around them. One in particular, number 4, Fernando Tatis Jr. What are your thoughts here? Obviously the numbers were somewhat down last year, but the power speed combination, and then what he would do over a full season and what we've seen, after missing a year and shaking off the rust, it wasn't all that much of a down year. Still very young and plenty of runway in terms of, you know, productive, really highly productive years for him. And I think, like, you see when you look at this board, there's like this elite group of like guys who could potentially have 30 seasons. And then everybody else who has a lot of good skills one way or the other. But it's like those elite guys that are going to put up pretty good batting averages, score a lot of runs, driving a lot of runs, and then have a chance for 30 totals. Those are kind of the guys up at the top.
100%. It's like Acuna, Julio, Corbin Carroll, Tatis, Bobby Witt, Kyle Tucker. They're all exactly what you said. So any order there for me, really. Yeah, I mean, Tatis, he had a down year for sure, but he still had 25 home runs, 29 stolen bases. He was 25-25 in a down year. And he's still 24 years old right now, not turning 25 until January. And if you look at his major league career, I know some of this may be tainted by PEDs, perhaps, but he's averaged over 600 plate appearances. He's averaged 35 home runs and 27 stolen bases. So I think he has to be in the top five, top six for sure. I'm not concerned about the stuff in the past. He took to right field like a duck to water, winning the Gold Glove, changed positions. And even in a, you know, kind of tumultuous year for the Padres, where they didn't do as well as, you know, people had hoped, he still kind of thrived as much as he could. So I like Tatis. He's someone that I would not be afraid to go after in a dynasty for sure.
Yeah, same here. I think the upside is tremendous. And, you know, like, look at a guy like Acuna. Acuna kind of had a downish year coming off of an injury in 2022. And then look at the season that we had. Tatis has that upside. He has the upside to go absolutely nuclear in any late given season. And that's what you're betting on. I thought he was kind of an interesting discussion point. I also wanted to make this point. I feel as if, like, around 11, 12, 13, there is a cliff here, right? When you get past, like, the Judge, Betts, Strider, maybe even Matt Olson group, then you start to take a little bit more risk on, right? We have Gunner there. We got Corey Seager, who's coming off a great year. But if you look at his 2022, he's had down years as well. So kind of interesting. Once you get into that group, you got some prospects that are ranked there. But we have one guy I wanted to bring up. I believe we have him at 22. That's Freddie Freeman. He's 34 years old. And I think this is interesting from a dynasty perspective. But he's a first baseman, really high-end skills. You know, the power's never crazy. He's had some big power seasons, but I think, like, if you were going to estimate it out, you're going to project it out, you're probably looking between, like, 24 to 26 home runs in a given season. With a great counting stats in that Dodgers lineup, and that shouldn't let up anytime soon. And as we talked about at the top of the show, it could potentially even get better. He's a guy at 34, going to age 34 season. I'm still confident gambling on for 3 to 5 years that he could still have really, really good production. I think maybe elite for the next three, and then sort of 4 to 5 that's still really good. I don't see him falling off a table necessarily. The skills are too high. I guess physically he could break down, but we haven't seen that yet, and it's not like he plays a super demanding position or anything like that. So want to get your thoughts on Freeman, because he is – unusual in the sense that he's 34 years old. He's older than a lot of these other guys that are on the list.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Freddie Freeman. The thing with him is you get batting average and you get OBP. You're not getting him for like the 40 home runs or whatever. So he's just a consistent hitter. He's kind of like the Manny Machado, Paul Goldschmidt, but slightly maybe a tier above for that. Funny thing is, I think he had like his career high in stolen bases last year, which is funny because you're not getting Freddie Freeman for stolen bases. And yet he stole, I can't remember what it was, maybe 15 or something like that, maybe even 20. And which is so funny at age 34. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. I think 3 seasons for sure, he's going to be in, you know, a top 3 first baseman probably, unless someone like Manzardo or someone pops up and takes the crown of some young up-and-comer comes and takes a top three position. But yeah, I think he's going to be good for 3 years, 5 years. If you're taking him to, you know, compete in year four and five, he's going to start getting long in the tooth then, I think. But yeah, I really like Freddie Freeman. I had him basically where he is, where we have him. I think I had him there on my personal list as well. So
it was,
I had no concerns.
It was 23 home runs. So maybe he's one of those 2020 guys. I mean, 23 stolen bases.
Excuse me, 23 stolen bases.
Misspoke wow. there. Yeah, kind of interesting. Here, another one we brought up, kind of a more risky guy. Ellie De La Cruz is on this list. Jordan Walker, I don't think it's necessarily risky, but I think could fall into this because could slide back a little bit, move up a little bit. Royce Lewis, I think, kind of falls into this category as well. And then another guy that kind of just slips under the list in C.J. Abrams. And is it all of these guys can be productive fantasy players with very small incremental steps. If any of these guys take a fairly sizable step forward, which isn't outrageous when you think about the talent level with the players that we're discussing here and some of the pedigrees of some of these players, these are guys that could be top 20 players. Like if Royce Lewis has a full healthy season, we get 145, 150 games out of Royce Lewis, he's a guy that could have 30 home runs and really good counting stats. And I don't know if we're going to see steals like we would have seen 3 or 4 years ago out of Lewis. But he's a guy that could pop into like the top two round value. You know, I mean, I certainly think that Ellie De La Cruz, if he took a big step forward in terms of strikeouts, was walking a little bit more. We know how explosive he can be. He's a guy that could take a pretty sizable step forward, you know, kind of into that group. And then Jordan Walker's a guy that, you know, I think if he materializes a lot of that power with that hit ability, he's not that different from, in terms of the upside, isn't that different from what you know, you get with a Freeman or like higher end Jordan Alvarez and those kind of guys. That's what I think people have been dreaming on with Walker, because he has that kind of impact and he's had the hit tool, the hit ability, and he, you know, showed it last year, even in the majors. He was a solid hitter. It wasn't outrageous, but once he came back up, he was really good and the underlying numbers weren't bad. So there's a handful of players here where I think there might be a little bit of risk based on what they could, what they scored in 2023, what they could score in 2024. But there's also that potential, that big blow up potential where, you know, you maybe take that chance and you can backfill with some safer players than the rounds following.
100%. I mean, if you're 22 years old, 23 years old, you have the huge upside. You have the huge ceiling to be even better than we have them. And I think that's why we have, just exactly like you outlined, Jordan Walker, Ellie De La Cruz, these guys. I mean, Royce Lewis is only 24. He has fewer than 300 plate appearances in the major league career. And he has 17 home runs, 6 stolen bases. So that's, you know, 34 home runs and 12 stolen bases in the 600 plate appearance season. Like these are the guys you want that are still in their early 20s. These are the guys that all your league mates are desperate to have as their, you know, their cogs in their lineup and their roster. So if you can get on them before they take the elevator up to the penthouse, and then you're going to cash in.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, man. I mean, I don't have too many other players to dive in here. I'm just going to give a quick plug to go and check out the Dynasty Top 50 if you haven't. If you have, go look at it again. Just go look at it again. I don't know. Give me a click. We're going to be coming back every single week with lots of fantasy content. I'm really excited for how this is all going to roll out. I think we've got some great stuff for you guys. And it's going to help you win some leagues, help you add some players early, which I think Baseball America's kind of secretly been doing for a while, but we're doing it across the board now with a lot of intent. And I'm happy to have our lead fantasy analyst and the best damn fantasy player in the world, Dylan White, alongside me. So there you go. Any final words for the people, Dylan?
No, other than I really hope Shohei Ohtani signs with the Jays. We started and we're going to end with the podcast with that bookending, as you will.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.